My mic started cutting out. What the fuck's happening?
It was this dog got fuck Penelope. Penelope added a soundbite.
All of a sudden, I heard a crowd cheering. Oh,
all right.
I feel
no. We're fine. The dog is comfortable.
Okay.
All right. That's all. That's all the technical difficulties we're having for the day.
I loved it. Added some spice.
Yeah. So you know, my podcast was dormant for about a good year.
Yeah, I remember.
There wasn't anybody I really wanted to talk to anymore. Like, I was kind of bored with it. Yeah. I had talked to everyone I thought I wanted to talk to. I was kind of like circling back. I started doing like top fives.
Right.
But then the Sacramento comedy scene hit this place where all of a sudden there was all these fresh faces, and I was really enjoying conversations with them at open mics. But you know, conversations at open mics aren't the best because you know, right, they're waiting to go up, or you're trying to listen to who's up there, or you know, you're trying to get out of there. And I was like, I think I want to bring the podcast back and start talking to some of these comics.
Yeah, it's I think what it was maybe people started and they hadn't gotten very good yet. And now some of those people that started like maybe a year or two back started getting good, started getting booked for stuff. And yeah, I think the comedy scene's in a pretty good place. I mean, SAC has always been, at least since I started, kind of a reservoir of incredibly talented comedians. When I got into the SAC scene, it was very, it wasn't good. Most of the headliners and like, the people were at the top, the working comics, were all road hacks that did one-nighters in like Corvallis and shit and just, you know, doing triple runs. But there was this crop of comics like Keith, who had been doing it for 10 years, but he was just starting to break through with like Lunas and stuff, and he got a record deal. And John Ross, who also had been doing it 10 years prior to me, Ellis Rodriguez, Cheryl the Soccer Mom was here, Brian Yang, who went on to write for WWE, and Nick Aragon, who went to LA and has a really successful podcast, and Chaz. So, I mean, there was this talented group of people that had been doing it for like 3 or 4 years, and then they started getting work at the clubs. And so I came in at I started with like Kyrie and JR DeGuzman and just really good comics, and it kind of transformed the scene into something that was really cool. And then around 2018, 2019, I came back to SAC from LA, and there was some good comics for sure, but very underwhelming in the open mic scene. I didn't see like a lot of people that I was like, oh, that person's definitely going to get work. But now it's 2023, and I see a lot of people that I think potentially could get work as long as they stay focused, you know, keep writing, keep trying to get booked, keep doing, you know, hitting the road and doing some out of town stuff. I'm encouraged by the amount of talent that's in SAC right now, as far as like the younger crop for sure. And I see them come through my storytelling class. So that helps. I get a real long look at a lot of people.
The storytelling class is great. What made you did the club reach out to you to start the storytelling class, or was it something that you had wanted to do? Like how did that come to be?
I had kind of talked. I did one storytelling workshop for Brian Krall at the SAC Comedy Spot, and that was like right before I moved to LA, so it was like 2017. And then when I moved back to SAC, I reached out to Molly at the Punchline and was like, hey, you know, I did this one workshop. I think it'd be cool to like do something that kind of focused on storytelling specifically for stand up. And we gave it a try and people enrolled, and shit, I've been doing it for 4 years.
Do you know how many classes you've had?
A bunch of them. I've had a couple hundred people come through though, which is just wild. Yeah, I've probably done 40 classes, which is very strange.
Does it blow your mind when people take it again and again and again?
No, I mean, it's cool. It's flattering because they're obviously getting something out of it. I always tell people, like, even if you don't like, you don't like my teaching style, or you don't feel like you got much out of it as far as like a bit goes, at the very least, it's going to be fun, and there's going to be somebody in there that you connect with, and you're going to make a friend. But I think for the most part, people do get stuff out of it. But it's, I always say, you know, the class isn't going to make you funny. You know, I don't think stand-up classes make you funny. But what it could do is help you structure a bit, give you alternative ways to look at structuring a narrative bit. And, you know, half the time I'm just ranting about stand-up. And so if you come in and you're like, it's a storytelling class and that's not really my style, you're still going to get something out of it because I basically have no filter about my experiences in stand-up. So you're at the very least going to get that out of it.
Yeah. You know, I first took your storytelling class at a time where I felt that I had a decent 7 to 10 minutes, but I was really struggling with like the thought of doing like 15 or 20 minutes was just so overwhelming to me. And I was like, there's no way, like I can't do it. And then I don't know if I talked with you or if I talked with Emily, somebody, I talked to somebody and they were like, well, you know, if you can get a good story in there, you could, you'll take your set from like 7 minutes to like 15 minutes. And then
it can, yeah.
It really, really helped me so much.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. It's, and the thing is that, you know, story bits, they do, and they can take up a chunk of time, you know? So if you're like, okay, I want to have a 15 minute, but I can't write like, you know, it's crazy to me when I think of like one-liner comics, like Hedberg doing a whole hour with one-liners, like the content creation and the joke, like the punchline economization.
It's so much stuff
out of control. But yeah, story. And I always say, that's why in the class, I'm always like, don't focus on like time, focus on like, don't focus on minutes, focus on moments. You know what I mean? Give them something to remember, you know, key points and punchlines that they'll take with them after the show, because nobody remembers how many minutes you did. They remember how many times they enjoyed it, you know,
when they laughed out loud, like,
right.
Yeah.
And, you know, time management is such a part of like it from a club structure and obviously from a comic structure, you know, you got 10 minutes, you're supposed to do 10, got 15, you're supposed to do 15, 40, you do 40. But like not focusing so much on like, okay, cool, I got 10 minutes, you know, just fucking be good, you know, focus on being good at stand up and then figure it out from there. You know, like, okay, what 7 minutes do I have? This usually lasts 7 minutes. I'm going to do this, you know, or whatever. But I think people get caught up, especially when they're new, get caught up in like, I got an hour, you know, and I'm like, maybe, but probably not, you know. Is it a good hour?
Yeah.
Like anybody can talk for an hour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is it any good, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Cause so that's a whole other topic of like people saying, well, I could do 30, I could do 40, but is it a good 40? Like, do I want to see that 40?
I saw a guy, I'm not going to name names, but I saw a guy, I was in the middle of like this circle of friends and I'm like the outsider, the old guy that's not at the open mics a lot, you know? So they're like,
I know the feeling.
I don't even know if they even knew who I was, but they're all talking and the guy's like, I got a pretty solid 25 right now. And then I watched him go up and I'm like, you didn't even have a good seven. You know what I mean? Like, I would hate to see that 25. Like, you struggled with five.
Yeah.
You know? So
what do you recommend to a new comic, like to maximize their 5 minutes at an open mic? What do you think?
I think going in with like manageable expectations of what an open mic is, you know, bombing in an open mic isn't necessarily a big deal. You know, a lot of times you're not even performing for people.
Yeah.
Performing for comics. I think my biggest advice would be when you go to an open mic, don't neglect the people that are there watching. Don't play to the back of the room. Don't make jokes for your friends. Don't try to pop your friends. Perform for the actual people.
Yeah.
And pay attention to the reaction, you know, if they're paying attention. And, you know, a lot of times you're at a bar. It takes a lot of the nuance out of your set. You can't really, like, callbacks don't work as well because they don't remember what you said because they're drunk. It's, you know, the open mic can be such a weird grind. but the repetitions help you so much when you get up at a showcase or something.
Yeah, even like the repetition of like taking the mic out of the stand and putting the stand away, like all of those little nuances are part of it, right?
Yeah, putting the that's so funny you'd mention that, because that's a thing that happens in the class. On the first day of my class, I'm like, if you're going to take the mic out of the stand, get the fucking mic stand out of your way. Don't create a barrier between you and the audience. And it doesn't matter how many times I say that, there's people that don't fucking do it. I'm just like, people have taken the classes several times. I'm like, they're just never going to do that. They're always going to have the mic in front of them. It's weird.
I think it's a nervous thing, too. Like, I think they're trying something that's out of their comfort zone, and they kind of forget the basics.
Right. I get it, too. I mean, I've mentioned before, you know, my first 6 months, I was so terrified of fucking with a mic stand that and I would keep the mic in the stand. And wherever, whatever height it was at, I would just use it at that height, because I didn't like, so I'm like leaning over, I'm looking up. It's, you know, I'm not small, I'm 6'2". So,
yeah,
you know, somebody short came up there, I would just like kind of hunch over. It was just a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally I got over the anxiety of like taking the mic out of the stand or adjusting the microphone stand. It's weird stuff like that where, you know, you don't think about it that much. And I think about it not at all, you know, 13 years later. But when I was new, I'm like, man, what a dork, you know. I was afraid of the mic stand.
That's crazy. When you first started out, were you storytelling, or were you one-liners? What was the evolution like?
I think it was like kind of a hybrid, you know. I've never been like a big one-liner guy, although I had a couple of like quick hitters for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a lot of content. You know, my first 5 minutes, I had 3 ideas, and I did those 3 ideas. It took about 5 minutes, you know, but it definitely evolved, you know. And I experimented early on with different like cadences. Like, I was like, maybe I'll try to be a high energy guy. And so for like a month, I was like super way more high energy. And people would be like, that is not you at all. Like, what are you doing? You
uh-huh. know?
Because people would always comment, like, you're very monotone and all this. And I'm like, I don't want to be monotone. But then it's just like kind of your thing, you know. And I use different inflections when I'm delivering things. But, you know, you got to just experiment a little bit to see what works the best for you. And I definitely, like, had some cringe, like that first year especially, cringy experimentations with trying to do what I was doing. But
really?
Storytelling definitely ended up being my thing.
Didn't you record an album like 2 years in?
2.5 years in.
2.5 years in. And you said that the first year was kind of cringe. So like really you're going into recording an album and you probably had like 18 months of what you really, really enjoyed? Because right, like those first few months is like kind of throwaway.
Right. You know, two of the bits that I did at my first open mic ended up on my first album.
Really?
Yeah. And so many people told me, I heard so many times, they're like, takes 10 years to have an hour. People told me that constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I'm 13 years in and I've recorded 2 hours and I've actually recorded 3 hours, and one of them I didn't like, so we didn't use it.
What didn't you like about it? Was it the quality, or was it the jokes? Was it the room? What is it that you didn't like about it? Because you hear about that all the time. Like, I know, like, just off the top of my head, Dean Del Rey recorded an album, and he shelved it. Like, just wasn't happy with it.
I was going through a very difficult time in my life when I recorded that album. I had just gone through a breakup. And I was drinking a lot.
Mm.
And I was bitter and upset and just going through it. And so I recorded in Austin at the Velveeta Room, one of the best rooms in the country, you know, in my opinion. And I did 3 shows, recorded all of them. I thought all of them were good live shows. Like, they're all of them were good. But I'm sloppy drunk on all of them.
Oh, wow.
And I also said some very hurtful things about my ex, which just completely unnecessary. You know, it's like, why even do that? You know? Mm-hmm. And I understand, like, oh, I'm telling my story and all this, but it was so fresh that in retrospect, it wouldn't have been fair to that person to like commit that to archive, you know?
Right.
And so I'm like, well, we could cut some of that stuff out, but it didn't matter. It was just like these three drunken performances in Austin that were fun, but not anything that I would be like, it wouldn't be a true follow-up to my other two, which I think are both very good, even to this day.
When you say you were sloppy drunk, were you sloppy drunk to the point where, like, if someone just heard it, they'd be like, oh, this guy's sloppy, or was it just you knew you were sloppy?
I'm definitely, like, I'm a little slurry here and there, but, I mean, it's focused enough, and all the jokes work, uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's not like I didn't have anything that didn't work, but, yeah, I mean, it's fun.
Okay.
You know, maybe at some point that the lost tapes will come out. But this one I'm gearing up to record, I'm super ready to record, you know, and I'm in a much better place. I'm in a really happy relationship, and I'm just laser focused.
Would you say you're thriving right now?
I'm doing good.
Because you've also even like dropped some weight, and you're hitting on all cylinders right now. Are you? Do you feel that way?
I do. I think I'm, I'm at the peak of my powers right now. I'm probably as good as I've ever been on stage. And, yeah, I've lost 50 pounds, and I'm acting a bunch, and my podcast is doing well, and I'm working the road a bunch. I got good friends. I can't bitch. Life's pretty good.
That's great. Have you felt yourself in this place before doing comedy?
Not really. Not as... You know, it's silly to say as a 46-year-old man, but this is the most grown up I've ever felt while doing stand up. I kind of delayed being a grown up for a lot of years, and you know, it's if you really want to do stand up, you got to realize it comes with sacrifices, and I sacrificed. If you think you're going to do stand-up hard and do it, like, the right way to try to get better at it and be successful and work a lot, and you don't think it's going to affect your relationships with people, and especially, like, a romantic partner, it does. And you have to have a really understanding partner, you know, because if you don't, it's going to add another layer of shit to your journey, you know? It's very hard to... Who wants somebody that's like, oh, I'd love to go out on Saturday night, but I got two shows, you know?
Yeah.
And there's all this other shit that goes on. And then you start really working, and you're working the road. And you're like, Wednesday through Sunday, I'm not going to be around. And that's going to happen like, you know, 5 times out of every 10 weeks.
And I'm going to be happy when that's happening.
Like, right.
Yeah, I'm going to be happy about that.
I want to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a weird place to be in.
Yeah, and you kind of want to be in both worlds, you know, because,
right.
You know, when I'm on the road, I miss my life at home. And when I'm at home, I miss being on the road. You know, it's this constant cycle of, like, want fulfillment and then miss, you know, I'm missing it.
You think that's also kind of, like, a scary place to be if you're not, like, at peace with your demons?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. Even if you are at peace with your demons, it's a scary place to be because everything's free. You know what I mean? Like you're on the road and you're eating for free, you're drinking for free. People will always offer you drugs. You know, mm-hmm. It's never. I mean, it's real easy to, even if you are really good at, you know, controlling, you know, your vices. The temptation is always there to be like, oh, maybe I'll just get completely fucking shithoused and, you know, take a lot of drugs.
Yeah, just tonight.
Be out till 4 a.m, you know, uh-huh. Sleep till 5. And, you know, I used to go hard when I'd be out on the road, I'd go hard. And I don't, you know, and I tour with Posehn, who, you know, loves to smoke pot. We'll have some whiskey with me, but... Dude, we're going out and we're having food. We might get a drink at a bar or go to a rock club or a metal club. And But then we go home, you know, to the hotel, and we chill. You know what I mean? It's not like fucking the Beastie Boys in 83. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no one wants that.
Right.
Yeah.
So luckily I've matured enough emotionally that I'm out there and I can be like, okay, this is what I'm doing, and I'm going home. And usually can't wait to hop on the plane home, you know, because I miss my life here.
Yeah. There's a couple things that you mentioned that I kind of want to touch on, and that's like, oh crap, where was I going with this? How important is it to have a life outside of comedy? Because like I see people that like, you know, we always hear the grind, and I fell into that when I first like I've been doing comedy 5 years right now, so like I think I'm in a. I like where I'm at right now. I think I've made a ton of mistakes. I've found some niches, and I see these different paths. And how important is it to have a life outside of comedy and not? I get the grind, and you want to work hard, you want to be a professional. But talk about like, because you mentioned it in your class, like get out and live.
Yeah, I think it might be actually the most.
Go.
Burping out.
Yeah, there you go.
I think it might be the. What's happening?
There we go.
Take it from the top.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it might be the most important thing, you know, to live a life worth commenting on, you know. And if you're just going to open mics and hanging out with, you know, these dorky open micers all the time, you're not going to have much to talk about, you know. So I always say keep real people in your life, you know. Keep your real friends and go do shit with them, you know, and have real conversations with like your partner and comment on everything. You know what I mean? You never know what's going to stick, you know?
Yeah.
And half the time when I'm, you know, I come up with a really good idea, it's because I said something that, you know, popped Alicia, you know, popped my girlfriend. And if I could get her to pop, I'm like, oh wait, maybe I'm onto something.
This is something, right?
Right. Yeah. She's already funny too, so I know it's not just coming from some, you know, shitbag person that doesn't have any idea what's funny.
Right. What I trip out when here's some examples, and then maybe we could bring it full circle. When I started comedy, I was like 46, 47. I was an old man.
Right.
And but I had all these stories, like life had fucking chewed me up and spit me out, and you know, I had lived, right?
Right.
And,
it's an advantage.
And I had these stories to tell, and I was going to open mics, and I was seeing the three that come to the top of my head: Miriam Masavi, Ruby Setnick, Drew Apsher.
Uh-huh. And, youngsters.
And I thought, these people are so funny. I don't know a lot about their lives coming up to, but I'm like, they can't have lived as much as I've lived, but they're so funny. I can't wait for life to chew them up and spit them out and give them something even grittier to talk about.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. You know, I think that about Lexi Acinelli.
Okay.
Who I think is, she's 21. I think
she just turned 21, yeah.
She's so funny. She's got such a great voice. She has such a great presence on stage. But when she actually has like real shit to talk about, she's going to be able to turn that into some amazing content, you know.
Yeah.
And right now she's, you know, she's talking about subjects she knows, and eventually she's gonna know so much more, you know. She's going off to school, who knows what the fuck will happen when she's down there. And I'm excited for her, you know. There's so many, like, she comes to the top of my head because I think she has such a unique presence, you know. There's not like a lot of people like her. But, you know, Amber Ellis is super funny, mm-hmm. and I think Lizzie has a lot of potential. And, you know, Ruby, who was another just kid, and now she's off doing her thing. You know, she's doing great. She's in New York, killing it.
Just killing it. And so funny in her voice. Like, she's evolved, but she's still that Ruby Setnick that we saw doing improv at the Comedy Spot, you know?
Yeah, and so... You know, and I just saw last night, my friend Erica Rhodes is in town, and Keith is featuring, and then Drew Apsher's, it's his first hosting weekend at the Punch. And I just watched him, and he came off like such a pro, you know, such a great host, and had a great set. And I'm like, yep, I remember when he was first starting, being like, I bet that guy ends up being pretty funny.
Yeah.
And he did, you know. And I see people right now that are like that in the scene, where I'm like, man, if they just, the key is to stick with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Keep doing it, especially with people that are talented in other ways. A lot of times that can like take their focus somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because life is life, you know.
What do you tell the Lexis, the Lizzies, the Ambers? What do you tell them?
Keep your eye on the prize, you know. And if you really want to do this, do it. You know, it's one of those things where I think it's very easy to get caught up in the lifestyle of like an open mic comic.
Yeah.
And I think that could be such a mistake. You know, people, when it becomes more about the hang and less about, you know, the performance, it's not good, you know. And sure, it's fun. Doing stand-up's fun. It's still the funnest thing I do.
Yeah.
But I have fun performing, and I have fun connecting with the audience. And, of course, I have a bunch of great friends that are stand-ups. And I love hanging out with them, and I have no problem hanging after a show or getting lunch before a show or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's all about what I'm doing on stage.
Yeah.
You know, I'm laser focused on what I'm doing on stage. So keep your priorities straight.
It seems like you keep really busy, but the stuff that keeps you busy are things that keep your creative mind moving. Like you've got podcasts. Like, tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, so I love wrestling and I love horror. So one of my friends who I met through doing my other podcast for the Hard Times, Diana Prince, who's a Darcy the Mail Girl on Shudder's Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs, she's a wrestling fan and obviously loves horror. So it was like, hey, we should do a podcast together about wrestling. And here we are, you know. Now I'm doing a live recording in Vegas for Joe Bob Briggs' Jamboree, and he's a guest, and Chris Jericho is going to be a guest on it, and it's becoming a whole thing, you know. We got a whole fan base for it, and then, you know, I've been shot a pilot, and that went cool, and, you know, I've been in a couple of movies. I was just in Megalodon: The Frenzy, which a very small role, but yeah, I want to do things that make that's creative, you know, trying to make art, you know.
Yeah.
I was in Melissa Villaseñor's music video, which was super fun. California. She's one of the, not only a great comic, but like just a great human. So
yeah, she's amazing.
It's been cool kind of growing a friendship with her and doing some creative stuff with her. So yeah, I'm trying to keep busy on doing shit that pertains to, you know, my passion and my career, and while still trying to balance, you know, being a good boyfriend and you know, making money.
Right. Do you think when I talk to a lot of the younger comics and even myself, like one of the things that comes up a lot is that we get this imposter syndrome where, right, I'll still like catch myself like in thoughts of like, I'm not even funny. People just like think I'm a nice guy. Like, I'm just jolly and they're laughing. Like, I don't belong here. Like,
they're only laughing because I'm jolly.
Like, what did you get caught up in that? Do you still get caught up in that? How do you deal with that? Because like, now you're doing things on such a big stage, and like, you just mentioned like all these names, and you couldn't have thought that it was going to take you this far.
No.
Or did you?
Well, I mean. That was like one of the things that really used to annoy other people about me, was that I always had like an undying belief in myself. You know, I always believed in me, you know, even when I was at my lowest, I was still like, you can do it, you know. But imposter syndrome is super real, and I still get it to this day. You know, when I was opening for Portugal the Man at the Fox Theater, you know, 3,000 lunatics in there, mm-hmm, on New Year's Eve. And I'm going out there doing stand-up, and I'm like, where the fuck am I? Like, who am I? Who, like, why? They're all going to find out that I suck. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. So it still happens.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And, you know, most nights it's not like that, but if I'm doing a big theater show or, you know, I did Largo with Patton Oswalt.
Oh, I was so bummed that I couldn't make that.
And, you know, I'm just like, well, this is going to be such an exposure, the fact that I'm not at these guys' level. You know what I mean?
Right.
That idea of, like, I'm here with Patton and, you know, Brian Posehn, and it's just like, they're going to, you know, they're all going to see what a fraud I am. And then you go out there and you kill it.
And didn't, like, one of them, like, do a post about you?
Oh, yeah, Patton Oswalt. Did a whole post that was like, you know, my God, you know, I was so impressed with Johnny Taylor. I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? And he didn't have to do that. You know, it's just like such a, first off, like, just a testament to what a great dude he is, to, you know, give me the rub,
right?
You know, publicly, which is super, is just super kind. And, just the idea of, like, wow, that guy, like, appreciated my, you know, this shit ain't easy.
Yeah.
You put your time and your heart and a lot of your energy into something, and to have it validated by someone you respect so much, means a lot, you know?
How comfortable are you with, like, I talk a lot about, like, it takes a village, find your tribe, and right. That we all have a place within that tribe. How comfortable are you with your position, as one of the elders in the local scene?
I'm growing into it.
Okay.
Because, you know, and I think I made a post about this not too long ago, is that I never really gave a fuck what anybody thought about me, you know. A lot of people I know when I was coming up found me unpleasant, cranky, overly direct, mean-spirited, you know, some would say. And, you know, you grow up. You know, and maybe it takes you longer than other people to, you know, emotionally mature enough to deal with your own insecurities so that you don't shout at people. And I used to do that, you know, and I wasn't pleasant, and I could be a dick, and I could be mean for no good reason, you know, to people that didn't necessarily deserve it. But, you know, that said, I find myself in this position years later as someone that, you know, people go to for advice and for mentorship. And I feel like I'm growing into it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not perfect at it, you know. And a lot of times, especially, this is going to sound bad, but especially if I don't find the person particularly talented.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time being like making space for a person that I'm like, it's not going to happen for you probably, you know, and who am I to say? I've been wrong before,
yeah,
for sure. But at the same time, I feel, you know, we all have a limited amount of time to give. And, I really have time for some people, and I probably don't have as much time for others, but, you know, that's just part of it. You know, pick your pony.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You can't have time for everybody, but I do have time for most.
Nice, nice. So the storytelling class is coming back. You're going to keep mentoring folks?
Going to keep trying. It's. I thought this last one might have been my last one.
I was hearing rumblings.
Yeah, but we're going to keep it rolling for now. We'll see.
And it's just because you're so busy.
Yeah, especially this fall, they were able to work date. I was like, I can't do certain dates because I don't want my entire week to be traveling and then doing a class and then going right back out on the road and then doing another class. So they were like, okay, they made the dates work. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just keep rolling for now, I guess.
Nice, nice. So it's still going to be on Tuesday night?
Tuesdays, but there's going to be a little break between the second and third class.
Oh, because I think that's kind of good.
I'm working the road. So.
Mm-hmm. Right on, right on. Johnny, we wrap up the podcast every time with this new segment called Five Easy Questions. And
right.
I guess I forgot to send them to you.
It's okay. I'll free.
Are you going to freestyle?
Freestyle.
Okay.
I was going to say free ball, but that sounds.
You could do that too.
Filthier than I mean.
But it's up to you. Let's see here. Five easy questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Ready. Question number one. Who or what inspires you?
I'm inspired every day by my girlfriend, mm-hmm. Alicia Davis. Who has stopped largely doing stand-up, but I'm inspired by her ambition to create. You know, she writes screenplays and scripts, and, you know, she's a graduate of the UCLA screenwriting program, and she's been a finalist, you know, for the Austin Film Festival and the San Francisco Film Festival, and she's so busy, you know. She's
yeah.
a full-time job, full-time mom, full-time girlfriend, and still able.
It's recording. It's the mic. This is the headphones. It's.
This is tripping me out, Jess. So still having the ability to push for her creative passion. So
right.
definitely inspired by her.
Yeah, it is a bummer that Alicia's not doing stand up. But to me, Alicia was always a writer.
She's a writer.
Yeah.
And, you know, she it sucks. She stopped doing stand up when she was getting very good at it, and I'm like, ain't that always the way?
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Question number two, what do you currently, and we use this phrase a lot about like streaming services, but like it could be movies, books, TV series. Like what are you currently binging? Like what is it? What's just like, you can't get enough of this right now.
I always kind of binge RuPaul's Drag Race.
Really?
On. I love it. Right now, Project Runway, I've been really into. I'm always kind of watching wrestling. I'm always kind of watching sports. So I'm always perpetually binging sports content.
Mm-hmm.
I watch almost no stand-up at this point.
That's weird, huh?
Yeah, and I have a hard time. Like, people will be like, you got to check this out. And sometimes I get around to it, and I'll still enjoy it if it's really good. But... man, sometimes I just can't bring myself to watch stand-up, you know? I see too much of it.
I kind of, like, schedule it. Like, okay, so-and-so's got a new special. I need to watch it.
If it's somebody that I'm particularly fond of or a friend,
mm-hmm.
I'll watch it. I'll watch Nate Bargatze, who I think is incredibly talented. Or anytime Patton has a new one, I'll watch it. Obviously, I'll watch Posehn's hour just to see how it turned out, even though I've seen him work through that shit 5,000 times by the time it comes out. Or Bamford. I'll always watch Bamford's new one. But for the most part, it's like, I'd rather watch Project Runway.
All right. I love it. Well, and that goes back to, you got to have other passions outside of comedy.
Right. And I'm always binging music, obviously.
Right on. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of not fulfilling what I think my life's destiny is. You know, I think I'm on a good path, and I'm afraid of fucking it up.
Are you afraid of running out of time?
Of course. You know, as an older person,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I got in shape, you know, was I didn't. You know, I was talking to a comedian, I won't mention their name, but they were like, you're about to have a lot of success, make sure you're alive for it.
Fuck yeah.
You know, so.
All right. Okay. If you're on death row, what's your last meal?
Last meal on death row? Probably like Penang curry over some rice. Maybe some Pad Khi Mao.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Thai food would be good. Maybe like a real big slab of sushi might be nice. Barbecue. Barbecue.
Any particular barbecue?
Yeah, maybe La Barbecue from Austin. That would be good.
Does Texas really have the best barbecue?
Yeah, I mean, I've had most of them. I did the Memphis barbecue, and I've had Carolina barbecue and Kansas City barbecue, and I liked the Texas barbecue the best still.
Okay. All right. And the final question, finishing up with the theme of the podcast, what's next? What's next for Johnny Taylor?
What's next? I mean, shit, from a, you know, from a literal level, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be at Cobb's with Brian Posehn October 19th through the 21st. I'll be with Greg Fitzsimmons at the San Francisco Punchline late November. And I'm probably going to record a new special here pretty soon. There'll be more deets ahead when the ink is dry.
Right on.
But, yeah, I'm just doing that. Other than that, you know, keep on keeping on. Keep writing, keep performing, and, you know, keep living.
Right on. John, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to talk about or anything you want to just finish with?
I would say more than anything, just go out there and whatever you're doing, whether it's comedy, music, whether you work in an office, just try to, you know, spread positivity in whatever way that is, you know. People are like, how are you saying to spread positivity? Your humor is so dark. And I'm like, if they leave with a smile on their face, I think we created something positive. So however you do it, there's so much hate and divide. Just go out there and love each other and be positive. And unless they're a dick, then feel free to hate them.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck dicks.
All right. You want to smoke a joint? Go get some lunch?
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks, Johnny.